Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Today, we visit a small town in Louisiana that has no shortage of festivals and events throughout the year, and we talk to a mayor who ran for alderman just because he wanted to help out, but frustration with things led him to soon become the mayor of his hometown, and now he's making positive changes in the face of some challenging times. We're going to go talk with Mayor Dan Curtis in the small town of Abita Springs, Louisiana. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. Soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. But life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Greater Harrelson Chamber of Commerce. When looking around for your next small town adventure, you should consider Harrelson County, Georgia. With four small towns, each with their own unique character, Harrelson County has all the charm and warmth of a rural community. Located just 1 hour from the heart of Atlanta, Harrelson County also offers access to the amenities of the big city. In Harrelson County, Georgia, you can enjoy taking a brisk walk among historic homes, eating lunch at one-of-a-kind restaurants, shopping for unique products lovingly curated by one of many local entrepreneurs. And the recreational opportunities are endless, including leisurely floats down the Tallapoosa River and attending some of the many outdoor festivals. Make plans to visit Harrelson County, Georgia today, and you just may decide to stay. For more information, visit harrelson.org. That's harrelson.org. Harrelson County. You're a one-hour drive to a nonstop flight to anywhere in the world. But once you're here, you might not want to go anywhere else. All right. I went in the wrong door at first, but I'm in the town hall of Abita Springs, Louisiana. I'm sitting in one of the administrative offices because it was the quietest place we could find in the building. I'm going to ask the man I'm talking to about what's going on because obviously there's some things going on. I went to the front door and the sign said, "We've moved. Come around to the side." And so I've confirmed I am still in town hall. I'm sitting with the mayor of Abita Springs, Louisiana, Mayor Dan Curtis. Mayor Curtis, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Well, Mr. Mayor, thank you for coming and welcome to Abita Springs.
Thank you, sir. I got to drive around just a little bit. There was, right. I guess it was a roundabout I hit right close to here. Yeah. I passed something. It looked like it was a brewery.
So, used to be. Yeah.
Used to be a brewery. Right. Okay. I've heard of that brewery before. So when I found out I was coming to Abita Springs, that was the first thing came to mind.
The Abita Brewery started in Abita.
Yeah.
And it started over there by the trailhead, which you pass by.
Okay.
As they grew,
yeah,
they moved a little bit further out.
Okay.
More land, get bigger.
Yeah, yeah. But still making a name for the town.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
They may have moved away, but they didn't change the name of the beer.
Nope, they haven't changed it. As a matter of fact, they want to be annexed in. They want to make sure that they're
So they're just outside the town limits?
We supply water, gas, and that type of stuff to them.
Okay.
Yeah. They're still very heavily involved in Abita.
Well, hey, since we're talking about other changes going on, I referenced kind of, well, it was the right door, just at the wrong time, because you guys have moved. And I don't know how long ago that was. Tell us what's going on here at Town Hall.
Well, just a few weeks ago, we actually decided to do the move. It's not completely 100% done. We're still trying to find where things need to go.
Right.
This used to be the fire station. It was a volunteer fire station. It was behind the Town Hall of Abita, which is the building up front on Level Street. We redid all this, gutted it, and completely redid it. We do a quarterly brochure. It's a little booklet. It's called the Live Oak. On the cover, inside cover of the Live Oak, it's got two pictures of the old building and then the new building. So, yeah. And you can kind of compare and see the difference, a lot of difference. We were just really in the front of the Town Hall. There's two offices. There's one on the left and one on the right. And we had eight people shoved in those offices. Mm. We had to do something. So we started remodeling this and then moved into here. So.
Yeah. Still not quite done, but I could tell I wanted to ask about it because it looked like progress. It looked pretty recent. Looks like you're still, and that's, while I'm sure those are growing pains, it's fun when you're growing.
Yeah, it is. And the difference is just unbelievable. The building has been completely transformed and it's amazing to see. People come here that have lived here all their lives and, you know, they go, "Whoa, I remember when this was," and they're looking at it now and they go, "Gee whiz, it's really nice." So that's a big part. It's important.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a lot more about what's happening and what will be happening in Abita Springs. But first, I want to get to know you a little bit. And I'll start with my first question I ask home, I guess. Were you born in Abita Springs, Louisiana?
Actually, I was. My parents lived over here. I was actually birthed in a New Orleans hospital. Yeah. My parents did not feel that. And I'm one of five, and I'm second to the youngest. Mm-hmm. So the last two of us were actually...
The family lived here, but you were technically born somewhere else. So the birth certificate, it may say New Orleans, but you're a small town guy.
Right. We've been here all my life. And, you know, you get married, you move away, you go do things, you know, you go to college, whatever. And there's always that pull back. So that's how we got back here.
Well, let me go back. You went through that story too fast. No. Let's talk about the journey. Did you graduate high school still here?
I did. I graduated from St. Paul's High School in Covington.
Okay. Where'd you go from there?
From there, I went to Ole Miss, play football.
Okay.
And I was up there 2 years, then transferred to Southeastern in Hammond.
Okay.
And finished up playing there and graduated.
All right. What'd you get a degree in?
Education.
Okay.
And taught at local high school, Mandeville High, down in Mandeville.
Okay, yeah, that's not too far. I passed through there to get here.
Right.
Yeah.
And I did a year at Slidell High.
Okay.
And a year at Mandeville Junior High.
So you moved around, but you were really still pretty close. You were in the region. Right. Did you ever go farther away than that?
No, with the teaching, that was it. You know?
Okay.
I was in the military as well as an enlisted soldier. I was 11 Bravo. I was an infantry guy in the Army. I went into an SF group.
Now tell everyone what SF means. I know it means Special Forces.
Special Forces group, yeah. I was an 18 Bravo, a weapons specialist.
So did you do that after, like before education, or you taught for
it was
a while?
Like before, and then, Then went to college got a degree.
Okay,
then went through OCS and became an officer.
Okay, so you enlisted, then came back to go to school at the...
Exactly.
Then right out of college, you went back in?
Yeah. And
see, look at you, skipping over those important details about your life.
I was a military human intelligence specialist.
Okay.
I had a lot of fun, loved the military. It was a great time. Moved back here and settled in. My wife's been teaching at Abita Elementary. She's been teaching now for 38 years. So
I'm going to say this a little tongue-in-cheek, but which one, combat war zones or education? And you said elementary school, high school?
Actually, I've taught all grades.
I was going to ask you which one of those might be more challenging.
probably the K through 6 was worse than any war zone. It's a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with the kids, you know, and so it was good.
So military, sounds like you had pretty long enough to call it a military career and then a career in education.
Yeah.
Because how long were you in the military? I guess including both periods, before college and after college.
Yeah. And then to include on the reserve side as well, because I did that too. Okay. And I got out and it was right at 15 years. So,
So you did do some travel away.
I did. I did. So much training and so much that I learned a lot from the military. I speak a second language because of that.
What language is that?
Brazilian Portuguese.
Okay.
So I was a Brazilian Portuguese linguist in a MI unit. You just don't get those kind of experiences.
Right.
Just being normal Joe.
You've already alluded to, because you kind of already said you always had the pull home. So it sounds like you were in a bunch of different places and some in the region doing education in surrounding communities.
Right.
And obviously your military career took you probably around the world. But at any point, did you think,
hey, I could live here. I want to retire here. I could do this. Or was it always a Beta Springs?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, some of the places, Fort Huachuca, Arizona, you know, and you go, well, that's really nice. Yeah, it was. It was great. And I loved it. I go back out west every chance I get. But it's just a visit.
Yeah.
It's not to stay.
Yeah.
Same thing. You know, California, I was at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California. Beautiful. Couldn't believe that the Army was actually paying me to be there. But they were. It's a great place to visit. I wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah.
It's just not here. This is special. Some people call Abita a diamond in a rough. I just don't think that gives it enough justice because it's more than just a diamond in the rough. I mean, this is a great place to live and to raise kids and, you know, to have a family.
Well, with all that moving around and two different careers at some point, and maybe it's even a third career, you got involved in public service right here in Abita. So talk about how you got involved with that.
I did. I ran for an alderman's position and won in 2013, I believe it was. And so I did 4 years. And 2 years into it, I found out, I said, you know, this whole Larson Act that governs the town of Abita, I said, this isn't for me. So I said, I'm doing my 2 more years after that. It's a 4-year term. So I'm going to do the next 2 years and then I'm done. Well, it got to the end and all 5 members of the board were quitting, weren't going to run again.
That seems a little odd for everybody. Was there really something going on in the town?
Yeah, it was just a lot of frustration between the administration and the board. You know, there wasn't a lot of cooperation or collaboration. The alderman just pretty much got sick of it, said the heck with it. And then there wasn't anybody running for mayor either, except for the mayor that was in. Mm-hmm. And so I thought one of the aldermen were going to run, and I asked her, and she said, no, I'm not going to do it. Not this time, maybe later. I said, well, I'm not letting him go in unopposed. So I said, I'm running for mayor. So I ran for mayor. And it just so happened that when I put my name in, next thing you know, there were 7 of us running for mayor.
Thought you were the only one.
Yeah, not aldermen. None of them ran, but just 6 other people. Well, 5 really, because it was me and the previous mayor. Mm-hmm. I just felt like, you know, it was the right thing to do. And so I walked to town and I knocked on doors. And I drugged my wife with me, and she's much better looking. And she'd be at the door and knock, and they'd come running out. And then I'd step in there and give them the little push call.
She was the bait.
That's right. And then said, you could talk to her all you want now. This is with that many people. We ran, and I came in first, and the previous mayor came in second. So we had to have a runoff. Then in the runoff, I handily won. So, and that started in 2019.
Okay.
So January 1st, 2019.
So you're still in your first term as mayor, but you served.
November is an election again.
Okay.
And I'm running for my second term, which I will tell everybody right here is my last term after that.
So
I won't run again.
You're going to run for one more.
That's it.
And then you're going to be a two-term mayor.
Two-term mayor.
If you get that second term.
If I get the second term.
We don't want to be presumptuous.
Right.
Let me ask this. Let me go back to, sounds like 2 years in, there was some frustration, not just on your part, but the rest of the aldermen as well. But when you initially decided to run for alderman, was there a specific maybe initiative or specific kind of cause you wanted to kind of champion, or was it just kind of a general?
I had reached a point in my life where I had a lot of time on my hands, so I kind of felt like I'd be a good person. You know, I could come up here and really be involved in the day-to-day running as an alderman, not trying to take anybody's spot, but just be more involved with the day-to-day running of the town and helping out that wasn't wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So it got a little frustrating. You know, we would just get things would come late and it would be, you know, the budget was 6 months behind on getting us the financial reports and that kind of stuff. And it got to the point where we were approving the next year's budget and we hadn't seen 5 months of the previous budget.
Right.
And you go, well, how do you expect it
to approve something? You don't have all the information.
Yeah. Yeah. So I voted no to approve the budget because I was by myself. I was the only one. But I mean, I couldn't see myself doing that.
Right.
So I guess just a different leadership style.
Yeah.
It just kind of forced everybody to go, I'm out. We're out. So
you were going to get out and you ended up not just staying in. I'd call that a double down.
Yeah. Be so, careful what you ask for, right?
So I guess I'm sure anybody listening to this wants to know how you're in your fourth year of a 4-year term running. You've already said you're running for re-election. So what has happened? There's physical changes in the building we're sitting in, we've already described. So I imagine there's some other changes in things. So talk about that and maybe what's happening, because you've now been, like I told you, I want people to be honest on this about some of the tensions and frustrations and helping to run a small town. But I can just see it. There's starting to be some kind of turnaround story. So I wanted to make sure we tell that part of it too. So what's been going on in the last 4 years?
Well, you know, let's not forget COVID 2020 and then Ida 2021.
Right.
So we had to deal with both of those on top of everything else. What started out as an alderman was a $6 million sewer line repair, which I didn't necessarily agree with. I mean, I think we needed to do the sewer line repair, but I kind of felt like it was putting the cart before the horse. We should have fixed the sewer plant first and then fixed that. But be that as it may, that's how it was put out and that's what we did. So when I got in, it really started to move real quick. We looked at it and we ended up stopping the bid at three different times, to the point where I had to hire an actual bid attorney. That's all she did to make sure we stopped it the third time, completely legal, because there were some questions that we had. CIPP, which is cured in place pipe, or grouting. I was not a fan of grouting. I wanted as much pipe as we could line the inside and harden. And it wasn't set up that way. We had different pumps for different lift stations, and we have 18 lift stations. So if we were going to try and keep pumps as spares, we would have to have about 15 different pumps sitting on the shelf at $9,000 a pump. And I said, nah, that's not really what we want. We need to kind of hone in on that. So we had to address those things first. And then we went out with the bid and it was awarded. And we went through that all the way through COVID, which I'm sure you do. You know that supplies were limited.
Yeah. Workforce issues,
all, and they had that issue here, you know, so, you know, they were trying to CIPP with two people. That's it. You know, one guy'd have to run up and down to the next manhole to make sure. I mean, it was just really, you know, it was really tough. We finally got past it. They got through and we're now finishing up the lift stations. It was a different company, but we got that done as well. They got one more lift station to do and they'll be done. And so far, knock on wood, it's been a success. So some of the changes that we made, I think, were critical. It took us longer to get it done. Most of that, though, was, you know, the circumstances
of the world.
Right. Yeah. So, but we were able to get by it.
Well, let me ask this then. And if you got more to talk about in the last four, like I said, just surviving through some of the things you've had to survive through, not just the global pandemic like everybody, but in Louisiana, you have hurricanes and they just like... I was actually just referencing with another mayor that has a similar story, similar hurricane. And the news cameras roll in and want to show how bad everything is for 2 weeks. Recovery can take 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
And people just forget that, those poor people in those towns around New Orleans, what they say. They're not naming them. They're not identifying specifically, Abia Springs or others.
And it's the same thing like with that that's going on right now in Kentucky, too. You know, I mean, you'll hear that for the next couple of weeks and they'll be broadcast from then it's gone.
Right. Then there's another news story. But the suffering and the recovery, it just takes a really, really long time.
We just had a lady got her roof fixed from Ida.
Yeah.
It's just, in the last week and a half.
Right.
You know,
and there are people that have moved, had to move out of their houses, have them raised to get back in, all those kinds of things because things, it's just devastating.
It is. There's a lot of that. And, you know, it's that 24-hour
Right. The news cycle wants to focus on that until
the next thing
goes up. Well, you're still dealing with that. But so if you want to talk about some of the things you've done in your first term, and I don't want to turn this into like a reelection campaign program for you, but what do you still want to accomplish? I know a pandemic kept a lot of us from being able to push as hard on things initiative wise as we would otherwise would have wanted to. What do you still want to see happen? What have you already maybe set in motion that you want to keep in motion if you're the mayor for the next 4 years?
Well, one of the things that we did, you know, we were toying with how we were going to tie the town hall and the annex to the park area down there in the museum. And then COVID hit. FEMA and all that were telling us to block off your parks and you've got to find spaces for people to work where they were distanced from each other and work online, work from home, this, that, and the other. So what we did is we took a crew and we had a boring rig that was ours. We still have it. And we just started boring down to the park. We ran 12 lead fiber optic all the way to the museum, 1,660 feet underground, and tied it into the town hall up front and connected everything. We have one marshal and we have a deputy marshal who's part-time. And basically they had to patrol the park area and all that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, plus the rest of the town. Well, that's almost impossible.
Yeah.
So we put cameras up and now we have cameras that are connected to my phone and we can spin them around and look and zoom and they're programmed to where when they see motion after hours, bam, they take a picture. And we've been able to use that for, gosh, for everything.
Yeah.
Events down in the park, we bring a production camera down there and we film it all and put it on our YouTube page. And so we're doing all that. You know, when you say, well, look, we did this and we bought laptops so we could set up three people in the museum and they'd be 20 feet apart from each other. Yeah, no, that's just normal business. So so they tell us that after the fact. Oh, so we had to eat a lot of that. You know, that just had to be expenses. And that slowed us down a little bit because, I mean, we had to take other money that we thought we were going to get back. I guess that's one of the things I'd like to do. I'd like to move forward. We're actually filming the meetings and all. We're putting it on our YouTube channel. You can go back and look at them. I want to continue that. I want to have a walkable area where you never lose the town Wi-Fi. Maybe going from the elementary school and the post office all the way to the museum. Bringing the beta into the 21st century and technology.
Yeah.
So we're trying to do all of that. That's probably one of the biggest things that I want to continue. That and then just preserving the land. We added 12.3 acres to our park. Supposedly it's one of the biggest municipal owned parks in the state.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So now it's like 25 acres of nothing but wooded park. And then the little bit that's up there by the museum.
Yeah.
And we're going to add another 7 acres that's down here on the end. So then it'd be over 30 acres for the whole park.
You got some things going and there's some things still looking forward to.
Yes. Yeah, we do. You know, we canceled the sheriff's contract. The town lost its law enforcement years back and it just kept getting more and more expensive. So we pay about $257,000 a year for the sheriff's department. And then on top of that, we had to pay $306,000 more. So our total bill was $520,000+ a year.
Which in a big city is just drop the bucket, but
it is.
It's a little chunk of your budget.
That's
I'm sure.
A big chunk of our budget. You know, so we just felt like we could get the same kind of coverage with just a marshal, you know, doing the regular policing. And then the deputy marshal handling the code enforcement. And it's worked out so far.
Yeah.
I mean, to date, in the last 3 years, we've been able to save the town $1.3 million
yeah.
in law enforcement costs.
Right.
So when you got that kind of money, you take it and you can do a lot of other things with it.
Sure,
so that's
sure.
what we're trying to do.
Well, I want to talk more about Abita and what people can do if they want to come visit and participate in activities and everything. But before we get to that, there's a segment I know I'm going to enjoy and our audience is going to enjoy because I always do. It's the get to know you question. So I've got four questions for us to help us get to know the mayor of Abita Springs. And the first one is, do you now or have you ever had a nickname? Now, with college football and military and education, I'm going to have a hard time believing there's not at least one nickname in there somewhere. You smiled as I said that, so.
Listen, I've been called a lot of things. I'm just going to tell you. Some very, very questionable, even by my wife.
I want to keep my rating a G rating right. here. So, yeah, let's put that caveat on there.
Yeah, the best man at my wedding was from Crowley, Louisiana. He used to call me Rock. He'd go, hey, Rock, you know.
Rock?
Yeah. And I don't know if he meant that because I was dumb as a rock, or I'm not really sure, you know. But
he never told you why he called you.
Yeah, he never did. It just happened. He had a nickname. It was Sick. So I don't know. Look, it's Sick and Rock. You know, so I don't really know why. I mean,
But no call sign when you're in all that time?
No, you know, we didn't know.
No nicknames in Special Forces?
Stupid. Stupid. We, you know, dummy. Some of those, but no, we never did any of that.
All right. I guess we're going with Rock then.
That's about it. I mean, that's the only one. Like all I said, unless, you know, my mom and dad had some choice ones for me too before they passed away. They had some choice names for me.
Well, again, if
but it, you got to worry about that rating.
My G so rating needs to be it. Maintained here at Small Town Podcast. Yeah. I don't want the explicit to start showing up on the thing on iTunes.
There you go.
All right. Second question. What would be your go-to karaoke song? We're in a karaoke club or it's karaoke night at the bar. You're next up. You get to pick whatever song you want. What are we putting up on the screen for you?
I've been told so many times that I can't carry a tune in a bucket.
No, that's not the point of karaoke. People try to say that.
You're
right,
but I'm just saying I would never do that. But
in a fantasy world where you had to, what song would you do? If you're having a hard time with this one, I got a question later on that'll help. We'll come back to it if you want to pass this now.
Yeah,
all right, next question's easier. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Stuffed bell peppers with shrimp and breadcrumbs.
Okay. That sounds good. I want to sit down and eat with that.
It's pretty good. My mom used to make it. It was just always one of my favorites.
That does sound good.
When you'd eat the bell pepper, you know, when I was a younger kid, I just ate the stuffing out the middle and left
it. And left the bell pepper. Yeah, but you're matured enough to appreciate the bell pepper.
You're actually eating the bell pepper and all, and you go, golly, look what I was missing.
Yeah,
when I was
missed
younger.
Out on all that. Yeah, because you can cut it out and mix it with the shrimp and rice and all the seasonings. And everything. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Shrimp stuffed bell pepper.
Yeah.
All right. Final question, and then we'll go back to the karaoke one. This will help you with that. If you could attend the concert of any band, singer, duo, any kind of performer of any kind, whether they are now dead or alive, whose concert would you want to attend?
The original Eagles.
All right.
Yeah.
The Eagles.
Hotel California.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. Now let's go back to the karaoke song.
Yeah.
Hotel California would be a great karaoke choice. Throw that out for you, but if you pick another Eagles song, that's fine.
No, I'm going to go with... Maria by Brooks and Dunn.
Okay. Look at that. See, we talked about the Eagles and then you can't, and then you got your karaoke song.
That's right.
Maria by Brooks and Dunn, but in concert, you want to see the Eagles.
I'd like to see them. Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for letting us get to know you. A few episodes ago, I mentioned that I had the opportunity to attend the Louisiana Municipal Association's annual conference in Lafayette, Louisiana. While I was there, I had the chance to sit down with our old friend, John Gallagher, LMA's executive director. He was very excited after not being able to get together in person for some time that his folks were once again able to gain from the sharing of experiences. I also asked him about a new statewide project that he was able to achieve by collaborating with the Police Jury Association, which represents the parish governments in that state. This will benefit the Louisiana local governments, especially in the rural areas. So, John, we're sitting here. I finally got you. It's day 3 of the LMA Summer Convention. Finally able to get back together again. I think it's the 85th. So talk about what that means for all the members, cities, towns, and villages, and the importance of kind of getting together, especially since we haven't been able to get together quite as much in the last few years.
Oh, that's right. And I apologize that it's been kind of busy, but I'm glad we're able to sit down.
Oh, no. You're a busy and important man. This is the early part of the day on the third day. I'm surprised I got you as early as
it is. Yes, it is. I've been up since about 5 o'clock getting ready. But no, this is great. This is always our annual convention is really the highlight of LMA's year. And it's really an opportunity to get our membership. And we have registered about 1,200 members and guests that have been registered to attend here in Lafayette, which is a great attendance. As you referenced, due to COVID, we had to take a year or so off. And so we're now kind of getting back into the live gathering parts of the more normalcy that we're used to. It's really great to have this convention here and be able to meet live because it's one networking opportunity. I hear that from so many members that attend this. Ability to network and exchange ideas and learn from small town folks, talk to other small town folks or mid-sized cities or mid-sized cities learn from the bigger cities. And so it's just really a great exchange of networking ideas and also education. We have close to 30 workshops on a variety of topics. And that's a very critical. Our main goal is it's part of our education, I guess, prong of our three prong approach to the LMA is education. And so we're trying to provide them, our members, with the leadership tools they need to be successful and be able to move their communities forward. So we're very proud of that. And also elect our leadership that guides the LMA through each year. So we're pleased to be able to install this evening Mayor Jennifer Vedrine from Ville Platte, who will be the first African-American female president in the 96-year history of the LMA. So we're very, very proud of that. In fact, she will only be the third female president in our history as well. So it's going to be a grand night, and it's historic time at the LMA that I'm very proud of.
I got to participate in all the different events, popped in a little bit in some of the working sessions, but the general sessions I was sitting in on, and some very important people at the state level in Louisiana gave you and your counterpart at the Police Jury Association credit for kind of working together. So I just wanted to ask and just speak to the importance of and the value of that collaboration, because like you and I talked about, and for people in the municipal and local government associations across the country, you're unfortunately a rarity for people to say that like that and be genuine about it. So talk about that collaboration, the importance of working together.
Oh, absolutely. We're very excited. We're so blessed, unlike a lot of other states, where our municipal association and our parish association, which is the county equivalent in Louisiana, have just such a great working relationship. We are lockstep on all issues, except, of course, when it comes to annexation. But we have a blood oath where we will do everything we can to work out any of those annexation issues outside of the legislature. And we've been very successful in that. But what that partnership is that you're referring to is we were called last March, February, March, into the governor's office with his staff. And they said, you know, with this IIJ money, the Infrastructure Act that was passed in November, there's 97 programs and billions of dollars that's available for infrastructure, road, sewer, water, broadband. But they're so technical. A lot of our folks are, you know, we're 80% rural, under 5,000 population, our towns. What the issue is, and we're hearing from, and the governor's office hearing from them, is just lack of the ability to pursue grants, write grants, submit grants. A lot of our folks have never dealt with federal funds. And they said, what we need you to do, myself and Guy Cormier, the Tech Director of the Police Jury Association, is you need to provide technical assistance to these rural areas, because we don't want to leave $1 left on the table that goes to the state of Louisiana. We both said, you know, that's a great idea. We agree. We're hearing the same thing. We just don't have the staffing or resources to make that really a viable pursuit. And so fast forward to the legislative session and working with our division administration, we were able to get initially in the last couple of days of the session inserted into the budget, $25 million. $20 million would go towards local matching funds, which, as you know, is so critical. And then $5 million would go to funding this grant assistance program. So at that time, we started pursuing a nonprofit, a 501c3 nonprofit that we've named Louisiana Infrastructure Technical Assistance Corporation. So we were in the process of getting that nonprofit done, and Guy was on his way to Alabama because they have a kind of a similar program. He was meeting with the county officials that run that program. And when Guy was getting off the plane in Alabama and we were watching the appropriations bill go through the process on the Senate side, that money had $25 million had suddenly disappeared. And of course, I called Guy and said, hey, Guy, guess what? The money's gone. And we were both like, oh, my gosh, this is, you know, and it got caught up in politics, I guess. But we were able to reach out to key legislators and just stress to them the importance of this collaboration. And so we were able to get that money back on the final day. And so what that money is going to do, again, it's a $20 million for the infrastructure local matching, and then $5 million will go to fund this nonprofit, the LITAC, as we call it. That's our acronym, because, you know, in government, we love acronyms. We meet monthly with the governor's cabinet to discuss the progress of this nonprofit. Right now, we are in pursuit of, we formed the nonprofit. We had our first board meeting. It's governed by the executive committees of the Police Jury Association and the LMA. And we're creating the bylaws, and we're working and getting an RFP to get consultants to submit their RFPs. So we hope to have a good group of consultants that we can send out to those municipalities and rural parishes that need assistance. And we're also looking eventually in the next month or so to hire an executive director that could oversee this entity. So it's really a historic partnership in the almost 100-year history of both the LMA and the police jury. It's the first time we've ever gotten together on something like this. And I'm hearing from other directors in other state leagues that are hearing about this and are like, this is a neat idea. Tell me more. How do you do it? And in the world of state municipal associations and county associations. If you get an idea stolen, that is a badge of honor. So we're very excited about this pursuit, and we are 100% committed on helping our, especially our rural areas, to getting this assistance.
What is it they say? Imitation is the highest form of flattery.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is the highest compliment.
Exactly.
I will say that in Georgia, R2, the Association of County Commissioners of Georgia and the Georgia Municipal Association have a similar working relationship. So I definitely want to make sure I say that. But to the point, and we talked about this, unfortunately, the majority of those associations in the United States is a lot more fighting. And I think it's because, well, like you said, there's one issue. You mentioned annexation in the case here. And I'm sure I know there's some revenue issues.
Right.
Because, hey, when the dollars get tight, everyone's like, wait, let's not share all this. So there's always going to be some things. But I think the important thing is, and Larry Hansen of GMA and Dave Wills of the ACCG did this in Georgia. Sounds like you've done it with your counterpart, Guy Cormier, in Louisiana. You say, we're probably not going to agree on this issue, but as much as possible, let's set it aside and focus on the probably 90%+ of things that we are. Hey, this is about local government and the ability for home rule, local control to keep happening.
Absolutely. And Larry and I, you know, I'm good friends with Larry Hansen and love working with him and get a lot of ideas from him. And we visit every so often. But like on this, we both realized a lot of these funds and scoring points for grants, it's taking that regional approach.
Yeah.
And we can't accomplish that regional approach without the collaboration between parishes and municipalities. And so it's very critical that we have that working relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, John. This Louisiana episode of Small Town Podcast is produced in partnership with the Louisiana Municipal Association and is sponsored by Louisiana Economic Development. LMA and LED invite you to visit and enjoy the small towns of Louisiana. Small Town Podcast is supported by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. If you are seeking a vibrant community with great entertainment and recreational opportunities, a low cost of living, and a strong local economy, then you should check out the City of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. Erwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Erwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Erwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to Erwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Erwinomics, helping small town business thrive. All right, I want to talk more now about Abita Springs and what people can do if we've convinced them to come visit. But first of all, I realized I didn't ask this. I said it is a town, so I know it is a town, but what's the population?
Right, we are a town. We just got it from the Secretary of State. We're 2,860, I believe, is okay. The actual number. It was 65, and I think they took five away from us. I don't know where they went.
I've done it before too, because there's a certain number for Osceola when I first became mayor. It was 3414. And so that's the number I would quote, but I think it's probably not completely accurate ever.
No.
And it probably changed the second after it was accurate
right.
Anyway.
Exactly right. That's exactly
somebody
right.
Moved, somebody changed, you know, whatever. Somebody was born.
Yeah.
Whatever. But 2,800, somewhere in that right. Range.
2,860.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about where we are.
And if somebody comes and suddenly it's 2,802 because two people come to town, let's talk about what they should do. I want to ask this. You've referenced the museum
right
up the road from here, because you're connected by sidewalks and got the park and everything. And I drove right past it, so I saw it. I know exactly what you're talking about when I came to what I thought was the front door of Town Hall, but but with all the growing and changing. So talk about the museum and what people could learn about. Is it just like a local history museum?
Pretty much. And we have a museum board that actually kind of oversees it. It falls underneath the town, but
yeah.
and it belongs to the town, but we kind of let them do their thing.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You got people actively engaged and maintaining.
Yes, we really
things.
Do. Yeah. And it's down by the, right off the trace by the, sits right next to the Abita Brewery, the brew pub,
right.
Which is, it's now the restaurant, just the brew pub. We have our pavilion down there from 1884. And then the hotel used to be part of the old Long Branch Hotel that was back in the early 1900s and 1800s and all that, was up on the hill on up on what they call Choctaw Ridge, which is on the north end of town, up Highway 59, sits up on this high part. During Katrina, trees went through this section of what was left out there, and the owners were going to tear it down.
Yeah.
So the town got together with the fire department and a bunch of other people, and they got the trees out and they moved it. And then
they moved the structure and put it down
in the where the museum sits today.
Okay.
And then they rebuilt it to look just like it did back when it was it was a wing of the Long Branch Hotel.
So I'm sure that took a lot of work, but that's worth it when a community puts the effort into preserving something, even if it's at a different location. Right.
So that's kind of like the hub of the town. That's kind of where everything happens.
Yeah, no, that's why I came in. Usually I'll put in my GPS, you know, hey, I want to go to the town hall or city hall. Well, this time I just put Abita Springs, and I was going to just, when I adjusted it. But when I got here, I realized quickly, oh, no, I can tell. I'm right here. And it just brought me right in, came around that the circle, the traffic circle, came down, and there's town hall right there. Yep, so, yeah, it was a really nice setup. And there was a lot. It was kind of like I could tell I was in the heart of the town without being told.
Right.
You know, and so that was a good
setup.
Which
is something that we really work at. Keeping that way. That's really what we want.
Yeah.
We want to try and keep it that way to where you know you've arrived in the heart of where everything is.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of
nice
what it is.
Greenfield, because you keep referring to the park that's down the street, but right across the what used to be the front entrance of Town Hall looks like kind of an open area for, you know, I could easily see some guys playing touch football or, you know, also frisbee
kid,
or something
Sunday,
like that.
Yeah. Every Sunday we played touch football right out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure did. Grew up doing that for years. People come from all over to play. I mean, it was really a lot of fun. We had a blast. But yes, that whole area, you know, is really the hub of the town. So it's important. We have all our festivals down there.
That was the next question I was going to ask you about. Local, you guys got an annual festival or just kind of like things throughout the year?
Yeah,
talk about that.
We do a Halloween festival down here across the street from the town hall. They trunk or treat. Mm-hmm. You know, we give away hot dogs and cotton candy and different things like that and play music. And then the kids just enjoy themselves all out and around trick or treating. And then in November, we have the Fall Fest, which is sponsored. It's its own organization, but it's in the park. And it's an all-day Saturday. And that afternoon, Friday and evening, they have a band that plays then. And then it's bands on two different stages throughout the day on Saturday. But then we have, you know, after that, so November, December, we have a night Christmas market called Fête de Noël. And it kind of takes on the German Christmas thing where they Glühwein is served, which is heated, spiced wine.
Yeah.
And
do you have a German influence here? Because usually when I come to Louisiana, it's French with a little Spanish.
Yeah,
that's the first time someone said, here's a German festival in Louisiana.
We were looking for something to do.
Okay, kinda, just wanted to be different.
Yeah. you know, wanted people to come to Abita and go, man, what is this?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's really what it was about.
Do you wear lederhosen during the festival?
I do not.
I was going to say, you might get more of a draw if you say, the mayor's wearing lederhosen.
Well, yeah bird legs in lederhosen. Huh? Yeah, that's... It was just one of those things that we had to come up with a name.
Yeah.
And so we were serving the Glühwein because we had a couple of people knew how to make it. And
said,
this is done at all the Christmas markets in Germany.
Right, yeah.
So, okay, we're not in Germany, but I mean, it's a Christmas market.
Let's make a Christmas. Yeah, let's make a German Christmas market.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool. We started looking to see if we could do an Oktoberfest, but we were a little bit behind the power curve for this October. So we're going to do it next year. So
okay.
That's the plan.
Oh, man. So come this year, but really come next
really
year.
Really come next year. That's right. but then you have Christmas, and then there's not really anything in January too much. And then, you know, February, March, April, there's the Busker Fest. There's the Pushmo Parade. All these different things happen down there and, you know, kind of come through the whole town. Yeah. The whole town garage sale. We have a whole town garage sale where the entire town shuts down. And everybody's got stuff out all over the place. And you just kind of come and park and walk around and pull your little red wagon.
Yeah, you need something to collect all the stuff if everyone's having a garage sale.
That's right. We usually do that, and it goes all the way through the 4th. Mm-hmm. With the 4th of July, we have a 4th of July celebration. That pretty much kind of winds it down. And then you turn around, and before you know it, the Opry will be back up. They do 6 times a year in the town hall.
Oh, wait. The Opry. Talk about the Opry.
The Abita Springs Opry.
Okay. Talk about that.
Well, it's world renowned. I mean, it's known all over. They bring the video to the parish president's guy in charge of video technology, and he puts it on the channel. But then they're attached to, like, I don't know, 80 or 90 different channels all around the world. So it gets shown on this public access thing, and you can see people in the town hall watching some of these musicians from all over, just from wherever. And they do that September, October, November.
So wait, you said people are in town hall here watching people from all over the world?
No.
Or people all over the world are watching from here? Okay. Yeah. I was thinking that's what it was, but the way you said that, I just wanted to clarify. Yeah.
They're performing in the town hall.
And they do that in town hall.
Inside the town hall.
And the Abita Opry.
The Abita Springs Opry, that's right. As a matter of fact, that and the Busker Fest, Push Mo Parade, those all have YouTube videos that are out there.
But this one you're pushing out live, and you said it's 6 times a year?
Yes, 6 times a year, September, October, November. And then March, April, May.
Is it all the performers are local, or you got people coming in that are more famous
No, they got people coming from all over.
Okay.
All over.
Just to come to Little Abita Springs and everyone all over the world can see it happen.
Right. It's supported by the Jazz and Heritage Festival in New Orleans and all that. Yeah, they get some pretty big.
So how long has that been going on?
Well, it was the Piney Woods Opry before.
Okay.
Which we were
okay. We were talking about that, earlier. Because I said Piney Woods usually refers to Northern Louisiana. You said, "Yeah, but we used to have them everywhere."
You said Piney Woods Opry was right here. The lady that did it, I spoke to her on the phone. Her mother got sick, and she just couldn't deal with it anymore. Never went back, so she kind of stopped that.
Okay,
and she allowed.
So she was doing it as a private thing, or just a family, or whatever.
It was a town thing,
but she was doing it, and so it stopped. And when they restarted it, instead of calling it Piney Woods,
Brian Gallen, who was the mayor before me, not right before me, but a few back, was very involved in the Piney Woods Opry.
Yeah.
So he asked her if he could take it and do the Abita Springs Opry and just continue it.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah. So they've been doing it for years and years.
Okay.
And it's pretty good. They get some good ones, you know.
Yeah.
Trombone Shorty and different, I mean, all kind of. Yeah, they get some good ones. So it's a lot of fun.
So even if you can't make it to Abita Springs, you can see Abita Springs 6 times a year on the Opry.
Well, yeah, you can go see the Busker Fest for the last 3 years. You can go watch the last, 2 years, because we didn't have it 1 year. But the last 2 years, you can still see the Busker Fest.
Yeah.
Great music.
Yeah.
Incredible. So
it was funny. You listed out so many things. They're like, yeah, then it kind of winds down about the 4th of July. Oh, and then it starts back up again.
That's right.
So you have more seasons of festivities than you do non-festivities here.
That's right.
There's always something going on.
Well, do you want people to come? I said, sure, we want people to come. We want people to come over here, spend all your money, then go home. Yeah. That's what we want. But no, we love it. And, you know, it's just one of the things I've heard from people all over the country. I'm serious. I'm talking even from Canada. And they go, you know, we just happened to be camping and we decided to come over here. Had no idea.
Yeah.
And then we stayed for the 4th, and it was the most unbelievable thing. Everybody was friendly, and there was no shoving, and everybody's just having a good time. And so, isn't it like that everywhere?
Yeah, we just like to hang out and enjoy each other's company and some good music.
It really is. It's a blast. This past 4th, we did a classic car show before. I didn't know how it would go over. The people walking up and down the cars were just like unbelievable. I was really impressed.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Well, we've talked about all the festivals and activities now. Is there anything you'd want to make sure that people just knew about the town, whether historically or culturally? What would you want to make sure someone knew about Abita, whether they get a chance to visit and go to those festivals or not?
Well, yeah, and a lot of this is covered in the museum, too. It has a lot of information about the Indians that were here at the same time as well, and how the people of Abita lived with the Indians in this area. The Choctaw Indians were the main group that, you know, we've been educated to believe that they were the ones that were here. The story of Abita was that Princess Abita married an American and moved her to New Orleans and got sick over there. So when she came back over here where the pine trees cleared the air, and she drank the water from the springs, and she was healed. That's that whole story. But the history of the Choctaw and how they moved along the river and actually lived here and made baskets and pottery and all the kind of stuff that they used is a real big part of Abida. And we're trying to get it all together now from the Choctaw Nation that's in Gina, Louisiana, or the one that's down in Florida. It's one of those two Indian nations that the one
their descendants were from here.
I think that's an important thing to understand. And we want to learn all that and get as much knowledge as we can so that we want to make that part of our history and make sure that we're, you know, giving them the kudos that they deserve for what they left us here to enjoy as Abida.
Yeah. So
that's a real big thing that we're working on. And I hope in a second term, if I get the second term, that's one of the things that I want to really push for, is try and get that Native American history down pat so we actually know what really happened and
make sure that story's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, Mayor, as we wrap up this episode, I want to give you the same opportunity I give all our guests and let you talk directly to the Small Town Podcast audience and tell them why they should come visit at one of the many, many festival opportunities you have, or maybe why they should look at moving to Abida Springs, Louisiana.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to do that, too. I know what we have here, and a lot of times it's hard for people here to put it into words, but this is a special place, and it's some place that if you ever do take the opportunity to come to Abida, you'll understand. Come spend a day, and I promise you, you'll want to be here a lifetime. The people are nice. They hold your feet to the fire when you say something, but that's okay. It transcends politics. So we're not Republican or Democrat or independent. You know, we're just Abishans, and that's how we want to be. And you can't say that in a lot of places, but we can say that here in Abida. It's a wonderful place to raise your kids, and it's a wonderful place to retire if you're older and, you know, and all you want to do is just have a place where, you know, you can walk through the town and feel safe. In Abida, we still have people that don't lock their doors. They never lock their cars. I mean, we have that. You can't say that in a lot of places, but we have it here. So come to Abida if you want. And if you don't think you want to move, then come and spend all your money then. It doesn't matter. It's all good with us.
So. All right. Mayor Dan Curtis, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Dan Curtis for talking with me. In case you were wondering, Mayor Curtis did win re-election and will be serving those next 4 years. I want to thank the Louisiana Municipal Association and Louisiana Economic Development for partnering and sponsoring this episode. And as always, I want to thank our season sponsors, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority, and the Greater Harrelson Chamber. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.